Hi, this is Angela Middleton, and welcome to my podcast called I Want to BA. The reason for this podcast is that there is a huge lack of careers advice in the UK, and I'm always asked by young people, by parents and by teachers, my views on improving careers advice, and particularly by parents, what should they say to their youngster who's leaving school. I think it is a wider subject. It's not just about what job do you want to do, but it is actually about how you want your life to be. And within that, what type of career you want to select. And that career can just be the first stepping stone. Nowadays, individuals have a whole portfolio of careers. The people that I've interviewed, even at the age of 30, have had four or five careers. Myself, I've had at least five different types of careers. So this podcast is about firstly talking about careers in general and careers advice, but secondly, bringing in individuals who have experienced careers in particular industries, hence the subject I Want to BA, and they can come and talk about the path that they took to actually get to where they are, and also talk about what it's like to actually do that job and have that career. So we'll be covering every type of career that we can think of in the UK, and it will be everything from architects to zoologists. So I look forward to comments, and we'll build things up as we go along, and hopefully it should be of great use to parents, to teachers and to young people. So today I have with me in the studio Kimberly Cooper, and Kim is going to tell us all about her career in fashion, specifically modelling within fashion. And Kim's got a really interesting story because she's now in a position where she has a number of household names as clients. She's in huge demand as a model. She's travelled around the world and done all sorts of modelling and promotions, so she knows the industry really well. And just more recently, she's actually set up her own modelling agency. What's interesting is that despite all of this success, Kim was a timid and shy person at school and actually suffered debilitating bullying at school. She didn't tell her parents about it, as she'll explain, and she endured this really, and it really did knock her confidence. But I think it's so interesting as you listen to her story that in the end, that is what made her stronger. It's what gave her resilience. And, you know, she looks back now and thinks of it as something that, although very unpleasant, helped her to achieve, you know, the status that she's achieved now. So, Kim, thanks so much for joining us. And we'll start off by just finding out a bit of your history, really, from when you left school to where we are now. So tell us about where you went to school and, you know, how that was for you.
So I grew up in Southeast London and just went to a state school, a mixed school. I'd say I was quite timid and really shy at school. I had quite a few problems at school, just bullying, and went through a bit of a tough time, I guess.
And how was your confidence then?
Literally through the floor.
And when was this? What sort of, how old were you?
I think it was from the age of, it was year 9 to year 11. Okay. So I must have been about 14, I guess, at that time, 15.
And how did you deal with that?
I went through a bit of a tough time, and it really affected my schoolwork at the time. Mm-hmm. I bunked off quite a lot. I got put on report. Generally just wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing academically.
How were your parents?
My parents couldn't understand what was going on. I hadn't told them at the time, so they were really confused as to why I was acting the way I did. Mm. And consequently, my GCSE results really suffered because I wasn't paying attention and other mm-hmm. things were going on, basically.
If there is anybody sitting here listening at the moment who is actually going through what you described, the bullying, mm-hmm. what advice would you give them?
You know, I remember, I'll never forget how I was made to feel, and it was awful at the time. It was really awful. But looking back, I think it is hard to stand up to bullies because you haven't got the confidence and you don't know what you're putting yourself in for. And also, sometimes there's a lot more of them than there is of you. So it's really difficult. But the best thing I did about it was to get out of the situation. When it's like that, you know, you just need to remove yourself from the situation, and moving schools was the best thing for me. Yeah. And doing my A-levels elsewhere was the best thing I could have done.
And I think as well, you know, making sure that your parents and the teachers are aware of
it.
Because
completely.
You didn't actually
tell my parents at all. And I think looking back, that was a bad decision. And I didn't want to tell people because I felt embarrassed. But my parents would have been able to help me so much more if they'd known about it. Mm.
But something happened that actually sort of boosted your confidence a little bit whilst you were at school.
Yeah, when I was 14, I was in Bluewater, the shopping centre. And I was scouted by Storm, which was a big fashion agency. That was a bit of a wake up call for me, because it made me think, okay, well, you know, maybe it's, things aren't so bad, and maybe something good has come of it, and there is something good about myself. That's not
so. Do you think the bullying was sort of jealousy because of how you look? Because clearly you must have looked quite striking for an agency like Storm to come and, you know, scout you in the middle of a shopping centre.
To be honest, to this day, I don't really know. Like, as a child, you don't understand why you're at that age. You don't understand why you're getting picked on, and all you think is you want it to stop. But I guess looking back, I was really tall and really skinny for my age, and all I wanted to do was fit in at school, and I definitely didn't. So maybe it was something to do with that. I'm not sure.
So then, what happened with school?
At the end of year 11, I left the school that I was at and went to another school not far away, purely because of the grief that I was getting at school, and also because the other school that I was going to offered better options for my A-levels. Right. So I really wanted to do dance and things like that, and they had really good facilities for dance and studios. So that was one of the deciders as well.
And how was that in terms of confidence and friendships and everything?
I think getting out of that bad environment with people bullying and things like that, I think it completely changed everything. Going to that school was... just completely changed me, to be honest. That was the beginning of when I started to actually realise who I was as a person, because before then, I didn't really know at all.
And you did your A-levels there?
Yes.
I think you said that you got scouted again.
Yes, I did. I got scouted in Bluewater again.
Right.
I think I was about 16, maybe, at that point.
Yeah.
Which was for... not, it wasn't for Storm, it was for more of a glamour agency, actually.
Right.
So by that point, I must have filled out a bit. And yeah. My body might have changed a little bit, but... I knew it wasn't really something I wanted to do. So I carried on with school and I applied for university.
Okay. And then what did you do at university?
I studied sports science at Roehampton.
Okay. That's in London, isn't
it? Yeah, in London, yeah.
And did you know what you wanted to do then?
No. When I left school, all I knew is that I enjoyed sport and I enjoyed dance. Mm-hmm. I had absolutely no idea what I wanted to do at all. So I kind of just followed what everyone else did. Okay. And that was just apply for uni.
And so while you're at uni, tell us a little bit more about sort of how you continued with the modelling that you just sort of started doing as a result of being scouted.
Yeah, so being at university in London was really helpful because it meant that I could just pop into castings whenever I had a spare 5 minutes, because all the work is based in London, or majority of modelling, I would say, is based in London. So that worked to my advantage, really. And throughout the 3 years that I was at uni, more and more work was coming along. So I was sort of trying to do a degree, but then also trying to model at the same time.
And what sorts of things were you doing?
I think I started off doing more promotional things, lots of car stuff, and I did Miss England, and I also did Miss Universe Great Britain, which I can't even remember how I got into them, to be honest.
Wow. But you said that you joined a girls squad. That sounded quite fun. Yeah, tell us a bit about that.
So that was for a bike company called Bennett's.
Yeah.
And they used to have this... this squad of, like, I think it was about 6 or 7 girls that they picked that they want to represent the brand. And we used to go all around the country doing all these promotional things. And then we went on, like, Soccer AM, and we did all these amazing fun things and all the newspapers and stuff. So that was really fun.
And then you were saying about pageants. So I don't, if anyone doesn't know what pageants are, what are they?
They're basically beauty competitions.
Okay.
I cannot remember how I got into them at all.
Yeah.
But it was a right laugh. It was great. I had a really good time.
And what ones were you in?
I was in Miss England. Yeah. And I got to the semi-finals. And I was in Miss Universe Great Britain.
Okay.
Got to the finals.
But there's a lot more to beauty pageants than really just sort of looking beautiful, isn't there? You have to do a lot of stuff in the background.
Yeah, it's really quite hard work. So you've got to raise a lot of money for charity. What else did we do? So we had to get sponsors. Right. There's quite a lot to it, to be honest, in the build up.
So getting sponsors is really where your sort of business acumen probably started to develop.
Yeah, you kind of just have to go in places and say, oh, you know, I'm doing Miss Universe, and will you sponsor me, and can you help me? And a lot of people were like, well, no, why would I help you? Like, but it was really hard, actually.
Yeah,
it was really hard, but I did get one.
You managed to get a sponsor. Who was the sponsor?
David Ray, my local hair salon, who are great. So
okay. Then tell us a bit about, because I think, again, you had sort of quite a lot of fun and, you know, ended up doing, experiencing a lot of sort of different things as a result of this pageant work, didn't you?
Yeah, so we used to go to lots of amazing parties, and like the Formula One parties we went to, and like I said, a lot of things on TV. We did a lot of press stuff. So yeah, that was my first insight, I think, into what it was like and all the fun things whilst at uni. Instead of being out with uni friends, I think I was doing more of that.
And had you decided, obviously you were coming up to the end of uni now, had you decided that this was going to be the career path for you, or were you still sort of thinking about other things?
I was definitely still thinking of other things. I could not make my mind up on what I wanted to do. Originally, I thought maybe I wanted to be a physio, but I did some work experience in that and I wasn't sure. Mm. And in order to be a physio, I'd have to do a master's. And I wasn't prepared to sign up for another, I think it was 2 years, if I wasn't 100% sure. And also alongside that, I was really enjoying the modelling that I was doing. And I was doing quite a few shoots in London as well. And the money at that time for my age was great.
Yeah.
So I sort of went along with that when I left.
And so when you left uni, it was sort of a continuation then of the sort of work you'd done, or was it a different type of modelling?
No, it was complete continuation.
Okay.
So I just, instead of being at uni two or three, well, I think it was 3 days a week, my course, or four, and modelling sort of half days, and on my day off, I just went straight in, and luckily enough, I was getting work to do it 4 times a week or something like that.
And you were saying it's quite lucrative, you're earning really good money.
Yeah, I am now. I mean, better than I was then, but
Yeah,
it was good back then because I was young, so, and I didn't have a mortgage to pay.
Yeah.
So it was great.
So we'll talk about your sort of, you know, the current role in a minute, but just interested in how the modelling you were doing then sort of transitioned to the modelling you're doing now.
I was modelling, doing shoots and everything else until I must have been about 21 maybe. And I was on a website called Star Now, which is basically a website that you can sign up to if you're, you know, a model, singer, dancer, all of them kind of things. And then also agencies are on there and lots of other different people. And you upload your profile and people can approach you for castings and lots of different things. And a fitting agency approached me and asked me to come in for a casting to see them for fittings, which I didn't know, I didn't have any idea what that was at the time. But it basically involves being a model who's the exact measurements that companies, you know, high street brands, all different kinds of brands can fit their clothes to your body.
Right.
But finding the model of that size is quite difficult. So
you went there and it turned out that you were a perfect size 10.
Yeah, I happened to be the perfect size 10. So literally all of my proportions, including like the width of my shoulders, the length of my arms, you know, every little thing apparently was this perfect size 10, which I thought was bizarre.
But I mean, as you were saying earlier that, you know, it's not only, this role is not only for perfect size 10s. It could be that you've been a perfect size 8 or 12.
Or they do petite, you know, if you think you go into Topshop, you get petite ranges, you get everything. So although for me, it was a standard size 10, you could also be a standard size 12 or an 8 or a petite 8 or a petite 10. So, yeah, it's quite a lot of different things.
And so there's a lot of demand for this. This is then what you sort of really moved into.
Yeah, this is now what I do most of the time. And there's so much, if you're the right size, there is a lot of demand for that kind of thing.
So you've been doing this for how many years now?
The fittings, probably six or seven years.
But you took a break from it, didn't you? So tell us
what happened. So I was working for one of the big high street brands for I think it was 3 years I was there, and I sort of found this note saying, I don't know who wrote it, it wasn't potentially for me to find, but I saw it said, oh, Kim's hips are too big or something like that, and that was it. I thought, oh my God, you know, they're going to get rid of me. And I was only, it was my bread and butter money at the time. I was doing shoots on some days and then 2 days a week I'd be going there.
Yeah.
So I knew, okay, that they, you know, they're going to get rid of me. And at that age, I think I was about 24. It was really hard. I found it really hard because it was shattering, because you think, oh God, you know, I've put on weight, and you really take it to heart.
And probably the amount of weight you put on was minute.
Oh, it was absolutely minute. Yeah, probably my hips went up 2 cm or something.
So this affected you, and what did you do next?
Well, I went through a bit of a dangerous path, I think, of trying to keep my weight down and obsessing over it, actually, which is something I've never been really that bothered. I really like my food, but I've been lucky enough to not really put on much weight. I've always quite kind of maintained similar measurements, but I think as you get older these things do change, and at 24 maybe I was just starting to fill out a little bit more naturally. I wasn't eating anymore, but I started cutting back on my food and trying to stick to the measurements they wanted me to be, but eventually I stopped working there. So
What was next?
And then I went to Istanbul. I just seized this opportunity and thought, you know, I've not got my regular bread and butter money isn't there anymore. And I knew if I wanted to find another fitting client, that it's difficult to take breaks because they want you there every week. So I thought now's my opportunity to go abroad and experienced the modelling industry in a different country.
And so there was a lot of competition there, you were saying?
Yeah, it was very competitive. So you've got models flying. So international models come in from all around the world and they stay with the different agencies in Istanbul. And mm-hmm. you stay there for, I think I was there for 3 or 4 months, and you're working 5 days a week, but most of the time you're casting, and it's very full on and it's very competitive. So.
But this gave you your confidence back.
It did, because there was quite a few in my model house. So you stay in a model house and there was about, I think it was about 7 of us girls from all different places. And me and the other blonde girl kept getting pulled out in casting. So, you know, we were working, but a lot of the other girls weren't working at all. Mm. And I soon realised that this was the industry, not just for a blonde, but someone with a bit more of a curvy figure.
Yeah.
They weren't after the catwalk, you know, size 6s. They were after a slightly curvy, more commercial looking model, which worked perfectly in my favour.
Right. So this brought your confidence back.
Yeah. So after the whole criticism that I got before with the fitting and that went to my head and made me feel really bad about myself, I then went to Istanbul and got my confidence back because I was working, doing all this commercial modelling and making money from it. So that was great.
So after that?
After that, I came back and I went back into fittings, working for different clients this time.
Yeah.
So each client has, although I'm a size 10 or sometimes a 12 between mm-hmm. different clients, they all have slightly different measurement requirements. So some will be slightly curvier, like Topshop will be a small size 10, whereas the white company is a large size 10. So right. I went more into just different clients, really, where my body had changed.
And how was your confidence now at this point, having had sort of a setback, but then having had it boosted again over in Istanbul? How were you when you came back to London?
I think I came back to London feeling a hell of a lot more confident. And I had such a good experience in Istanbul with working that I sort of thought to myself, do you know what, I can do this. And, you know, if I did put on a bit of weight, it's fine, because there is other parts that I can, there's other things I can do. And it doesn't mean you have to be a size 6. I think that's what I learned from it. Is you don't have to be skinny. There's this market is for all shapes and sizes.
And then you moved into something else, didn't you?
So about 18 months ago, I realised there was a huge demand for these fit models that seem to be quite hard to find. So if, for example, if I'm off ill, or you know, I can't do a job, my clients really struggled to find someone to put in my replacement. So I was getting a lot of work because I was just in demand because I was that particular size that they were after, and I couldn't do all of the jobs that I was getting asked to do. So I thought to myself, you know, I might as well take this opportunity, and instead of just getting a friend or someone else I knew to do it, maybe try and take a cut and start building an agency. That's what I started to do. I started to send other models in my replacement if I was sick or if I couldn't go because I was working elsewhere, and then I'd take a percentage of what I'd charge my client and what I'd give to the model.
And as you were saying earlier, you know, this is your body changes, and this is not necessarily something that you might want to do forever, but what a great next step it can be in this industry to set up your own agency. And that's what you've done, basically.
Yeah, exactly. I think I always think about what I'm going to do in the future, because obviously modelling doesn't last forever, and it's not something that you're always going to be able to do. And I started to think, okay, especially with fittings, because your body does change as you get older, and although there'll be different brands that are suited to your shape, I'm probably not going to be able to work as much as I do when I'm older. So I started to think, what else can I do, and all that kind of thing. And I was working so much, and I thought, this is the opportunity to start it. I probably started thinking about it in the February, but I didn't actually act on it until like November.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean,
it takes a bit of time to get, like, you figure out how you're going to do it, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. So tell us a little bit about a typical week as a model.
So generally, I work for the same clients every week. I'd say I have about four major clients that I work for, all sort of high street brands and some more high fashion, like couture brands, and I'm their fit model, like, ongoing, and they fit all of the clothes to me. So generally, like, one morning I'll be, you know, at Peter Pilotto, and I'm there for 4 hours, and then I'm running, you know, trying on all these lovely dresses, feeling like an absolute queen in these stunning dresses, and then I'll run all the way across town to the white company, where I'm then standing in cashmere and silk pyjamas. So, you know, it's completely different day to day, and it's from one extreme to the other completely.
And what would you say is the best bits about the role?
I think the main thing which I enjoy is the flexibility. So not being in a 9-to-5, you know, I can take days off when I want, and I'm working my own hours, and being self-employed is really great, because it just gives you so much flexibility, and that's what, you know, that's what I like about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, it is really good money. You're paid by the hour, but then also you're paid on a day rate. So the money is good, because if you're in demand and you have got them right measurements, clients are willing to pay for that. So
yeah. So you are only 28, but I know, you know, you live a very nice lifestyle. So obviously, without sort of telling us how much you earn, you know, it's afforded you a great lifestyle, hasn't it? Nice, your own house.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
everything
it's
like
great.
That.
But we've just bought our own house a year ago and we're renovating it and stuff. But I think I don't know why, but I've always been one of them people that sort of wanted to be at certain places. You know, I want to be doing this at that age and I want to be buying my house at that age. And I've always been a bit like that. But I think we thought about having this nice lifestyle. And it's nice. We do live a nice lifestyle. Don't get me wrong. We're not super loaded. But, you know, I feel like I've not done too bad. So that's what's nice. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. But tell us about the challenges, the biggest challenges with this particular career.
OK, I think the worst bit is probably how destructive this industry can be. I think you have to be very strong-minded, and that's where I struggled in the beginning. But I don't struggle anymore because I am very strong-minded. But that's, you know, the job's made me like that at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Especially the weight thing, I think that's hard. I think if you're the sort of person where your body fluctuates a lot, then it would be a hell of a lot worse than it is for me, because my body doesn't actually change that much. Because, you know, we're talking a couple of centimetres here and there, and then you've lost your job. So that's difficult.
Isn't it interesting, though, that, you know, you've gone from this much younger person at school who was timid, shy in your words, lacking confidence and bullied, you know, about a number of things. And yet here you are now, a model, you know, in front of the camera, being fitted by all and sundry and being judged on your looks, really, and actually feeling very confident. And you've overcome all of those sort of, you know, lacking of self-esteem, and actually a very, very confident person now. So that job has actually done that for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you'd have said that to me 10 years ago, I would have laughed and said there's no way in hell that would be me. But I think being bullied and what I went through at school, I think it kind of gave me the motivation to think, do you know what, no, and put my foot down and think, this isn't what it's going to be like. There's so much more to this, and just to overcome it all, really.
And do you think that made you more resilient with the criticism you might have had whilst you've been doing this job, you know, with people saying that you need to lose weight and things like that?
Yeah, do you know what? I've never actually thought of that. But I think maybe you're right, in a sense that I'm quite good with knockbacks now. I know how to take criticism and it doesn't bother me at all. If someone says, oh, do you know what? You're completely not right for this. Your hair's just not, you know, just the simplest things.
Yeah.
But I don't care. I just know that every role is different for someone and you might not be right for that role. But I think if you learn how to deal with the criticism, it's fine. You just can't take it to heart.
And isn't that a great example of how when you're going through something that is horrible and uncomfortable, that you can look back at it after and go, ah, well, that was a good thing that came out of it. Because the result of that has made me stronger.
Yeah, I mean, it's massive. Like, so much goodness came out of such a bad thing. And it's nice, because there's probably a lot of children and kids that were my age that go through this and have absolutely no self-belief. And, you know, they feel horrible about themselves. But it just shows that if you put your mind to something and get past it, you can get to where you want to be. And you
absolutely
should always, you know, believe in yourself, really.
So we've talked about self-belief and resilience to criticism, which you clearly have now. Any other attributes that you think that people need in order to be successful in this industry?
So, yeah, self-belief, obviously, I would say is the main one. Without that, then I don't think that you'd really succeed. But you need to be quite business-minded, because I sort of see my, it sounds silly, but I see myself as like a product. And at the end of the day, I'm selling myself. You know, it's just me, myself and I in this game. And, you know, that's basically how I see it. And I would also say that building relationships with people is important, because you never know where it's going to lead you. You know, you could go on a shoot one day and get on really well with a photographer and he likes the way you photograph, and then he could photograph for Superdrug Boots and you know, and a handful of other people. And then he can say to an agency, oh, I know a really good model who's blonde and she'd be good for that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So that's how I've got jobs like that in the past. And it's all about building a rapport with people.
So hopefully we've inspired a number of people who are sitting here listening to this. I mean, certainly I feel really inspired listening to you. It's amazing. If you have got people sitting there now who are thinking, you know, I'd love to either I've always wanted to be a model, or actually I'm really interested in the fitting side of modelling, or even the fashion industry in general, what sorts of tips would you give them?
First of all, I think the main thing, and it did take me quite a long time to figure this out, but you need to know what market you're in. So for example, I'm 5'9", but I'm a size 10, so I'm never going to be a catwalk model, because they're 6 foot and a size, I don't know, maybe a 4. So that's not my gig. So as soon as you realise that, the better, because otherwise you're throwing yourself into an industry and you don't know where you're going. You need to know where you're going. So I know that my market is TV commercials, magazines, very commercial, girl next door. And that's the castings I go for. And that's generally the jobs that I end up doing a lot of the time. And obviously fittings as well. So I think a lot of people also think that modelling is for them catwalk models. And there's so much more to it than that. I mean, there's plus size agencies now. I think nowadays as well, there's so much more, you know, like compared to when I started. So there's plus size agencies. There's, you know, there's fittings for petite. And I also know petite models that do really well in commercial work. You know, if you've got a really commercial looking face and, you know, everything like that, you know, you can still get loads of work. So don't think that it's not for you just because you're not that typical 6 foot, you know, size four model.
Okay. And other tips?
So once you've sort of realised what your market is, so for example, mine is commercial. I went about it by getting photos, commercial looking photos, for example, bridal photos of me in bridal wear and, you know, like really smiley photos and all that kind of thing. So you're building a portfolio of pictures of what you think you're marketing yourself as. Or if you're a fashion model, you know, you need to be doing some more edgier kind of things, or, you know, I don't know, but you need to get pictures within that right part of the market first of all. And then after that, I'd say, you know, I don't think there's any harm in adding photographers on Instagram. There's quite a lot of photographers in London who are always willing to work with new faces, because let's face it, there's hundreds of people out there who can do it, and, you know, they can see the potential in people. So always approach them and see what they have to say.
And having got your photos, etc., what about the agencies?
So a lot of agencies have a service where you can go in. It's called a walk-in. You can just walk in, show them the pictures that you do have, and they'll see you and just talk to you and say what they think. And even if they don't take you on, they'll probably put you in the right direction and say, you know, try this agency, they're much more commercial, or, you know, you're more of a fashion model, you should try that agency. And that in itself would be a lot of help, and it's a really good place to start.
So if you actually are interested in this industry but you don't necessarily want to be a model, you were saying that there's big teams involved. So what other types of jobs would there be but still involved in this industry?
Yeah, so in the fashion side of things, when I'm doing the fittings, there's so much that goes on behind the scene of making clothes, and how clothes get into the stores and what goes on beforehand is huge. And there's so many roles within the fashion industry, from designers to garment technologists, or the people that fit the clothes on us, or, you know, buyers. There's all these different aspects that you could go into. You know, modelling isn't for everyone, and fashion is really interesting. Since I've been doing fittings, I've learned a lot about behind the scenes of what goes on, and it's so interesting. So I'd definitely recommend that as well.
So Kimu, if people want to see you online or ask you any questions, where's the best place for them to go?
Just go to my Instagram. It's Kimberly Cooper. I'm happy to answer any questions.
I'll probably see some lovely photos of you as well.
Yeah, maybe.
Thanks so much. Lovely to talk to you, and congratulations on all your success.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.